We started this hour with a question. Is the nation-state splintering? Well, for 65.6 million people around the world, it already has. That's the number of people currently displaced, forced from home by war or conflict or persecution. And to put this in perspective, that's nearly 20 people a minute. Well, the novelist Mohsen Hamid sees the global refugee crisis as both a tragedy and an opportunity. Hamid is an internationally admired writer. He's known for tackling big issues like globalization and fundamentalism in fiction. His newest novel, Exit West, is set in a world of permanent mass migration. It's a love story, which begins in a city ripped apart by civil war. He told Steve Paulson it's modeled in part on his own country, Pakistan, and here's how it begins.
In a city swollen by refugees, but still mostly at peace, or at least not yet openly at war, a young man met a young woman in a classroom and did not speak to her for many days. His name was Saeed and her name was Nadia, and he had a beard. And she was always clad from the tips of her toes to the bottom of her jugular notch in a flowing black robe. Back then, people continued to enjoy the luxury of wearing more or less what they wanted to wear. And so these choices meant something. It might seem odd that in cities teetering at the edge of the abyss, young people still go to class. But that is the way of things, with cities as with life. For one moment, we are pottering about our errands as usual, and the next, we are dying, and our eternally impending ending does not put a stop to our transient beginnings and middles until the instant when it does.
Oh, that is a great setup. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mohsen, your novels typically deal with very loaded subjects, and this one revolves around the refugee crisis and the explosion of migrants around the world. Why did you want to take on this topic?
I think that I've been migrating my whole life geographically. I came to California from Pakistan when I was 3, went back to Pakistan when I was 9, came to America at 18, London at 30, back to Pakistan at 38. And so the growing anti-migrant rhetoric that you're seeing all over the world is something I take personally. And I wanted to write a novel that began to explore the idea that not only are migrants not villains, but that actually everyone is a migrant, and that it's a universal part of the human condition to migrate.
Why is everyone a migrant? I mean, the refugees, I understand, but what about the rest of us?
Well, I think that what happens in our lives is that we migrate through time. So in a sense, we're each a refugee from our own childhood. You know, the school we went to, the people we played with, those things will have all changed, some dispersed, some people will have passed away. And we can't return to that time. And we feel a sense of loss, and we feel that things change. And things continue to change throughout our lives. And we often try to deny the sorrow and loss that occurs by migrating in time in this way. But I think that's a mistake. It's better to acknowledge that feeling and to see how it unites us with people who migrate also across geographies. Hmm.
So can you tell me about your two main characters, Saeed and Nadia?
Saeed and Nadia are two young people in an unnamed city that is about to descend into civil war. And they meet in a evening class. Saeed is very close to his parents and quietly religious in a way. And Nadia is somebody who has broken with her family, who wants to reinvent herself and who's resolutely looking towards the future into something different. They're quite different from each other, but they meet and they fall for each other. And the story of the novel is the story of their relationship.
And the city where they live is never named. Why did you make that choice?
Partly so that the reader could imagine into that city. I based the city on Lahore, Pakistan, where I live, but undergoing tragic circumstances, violent circumstances, which fortunately Lahore has not been through. I didn't have the heart, really, to give their city's name the name of my city.
So this unnamed city in your novel becomes a war zone. It's like some of the cities we read about in Syria. Bombs go off routinely, people get hauled away in the middle of the night or executed because they don't have the right politics or the right religion. Have you been personally touched by this kind of violence?
When you live in a place like Lahore in Pakistan, where I live, it's not like Damascus or Baghdad. But like those cities, people in Lahore will know of someone who's been affected by a bombing or by an attack or by an assassination.
What about you? Do you know anyone who's...
Yeah, well, my mother-in-law's best friend, her husband was the governor of our province, and he spoke out in favor of the rights of minorities and Christians in particular. He was assassinated. Assassinated by his own bodyguard, who accused him of blasphemy.
That must hit home for you.
I don't want to give the impression that Lahore is a particularly violent city, but political violence has touched people there.
Now, what I find so interesting about your personal history, you already mentioned, is that you moved back to Pakistan after living in both America and London. As you say, you've been a migrant yourself.
Yeah, my wife and I, shortly after the birth of our first child, my wife is also from Lahore, we started wondering whether if we didn't go back now, would we maybe never go back? And we thought we'd go and see, did we still like it? Would we be happy there? And that was 8 years ago. And living in Pakistan, I can't say has been, you know, always easy. And sometimes I feel almost foreign in Pakistan, in the same way that I feel almost foreign in America or Britain.
Almost foreign in what regard?
Well, you know, I'm such a mongrel now and such a mix of things that I never feel, I suppose, entirely at home anywhere. But one thing which I've found as I get older is that that sense of being a bit different, a bit foreign, a bit out of place, allows me to connect with other people because I've come to understand that almost everybody feels a little bit out of place for different reasons. The only daughter in a family with five sons, or the only gay child in a family where everybody else is straight. People, for so many different reasons, can feel foreign.
And one of the things that you get into in your novel is this eruption of different factions sort of fighting with each other. I'm thinking, for instance, about independence movements that are popping up all over the place. Catalonia in Spain, Scotland wanting to secede from the UK, Quebec in Canada, places that have distinct cultural identities. And I guess I'm wondering if you see these kinds of movements as problems, places that really don't want to be part of the larger nation state that they are legally bound to.
These sorts of secessionist movements, I mean, I have a position on them based on the experience of Pakistan. Pakistan, in a way, was the original 20th century state formed on religious lines. British Imperial India was divided up into Hindu-majority India and Muslim-majority Pakistan in 1947. And since then, what we've seen is Pakistan has become ever increasingly less tolerant of other viewpoints. Who is Muslim enough to be Pakistani has become more and more contested. We imagine that we can take countries and break them into smaller parts, and those smaller parts will be much easier to manage. It isn't always the case. It can be the case. We have to imagine that these smaller countries are not being formed on the basis of a kind of ethnic identity, but they're being formed on a more inclusive promise that says that everybody in this new state belongs. But too often we're seeing something else happen. Now, that doesn't mean you should never split countries, but I think the potential violence and the potential devastation that can occur are very real. And you probably shouldn't walk down that path unless the current situation is itself so violent and unbearable that you can't stand it any longer.
And I also get the sense from your novel that you see this situation with refugees and migrants now as truly being a global crisis that we really have barely begun to grasp.
Yes, I think that the direction of human history is the direction of greater equality. Many of us believe that regardless of your race, you should be treated equally, regardless of your gender, regardless of your sexual orientation or your religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs, you should be treated equally. And I think that now the idea that somebody born in Milwaukee and somebody born in Mogadishu, two children, should have fundamentally different rights about how they can live, where they can live, and the child in Mogadishu should stay there in the face of violence and potentially die just because of the lottery of where they were born, that position is going to become more and more untenable. And in 200 or 300 years' time, people are going to look back at us, the people of today, who denied refugees access and denied migrants access, and think that we are as barbaric as we think that slaveholders were, who treated black slaves, African-American slaves, as subhuman.
Sounds like you're saying that we need to get rid of national borders. People should just be able to live wherever they want.
Well, look, national borders are pretty new. Until 100 years ago, there weren't any passports. People moved around. It's not like the nation state with the existing border system and immigration checks has been there since the beginning of time. People used to move. It's a new thing. And I think the real model shouldn't be our countries. It should be our cities. You can move to New York from somewhere else and become a New Yorker. Cities grant, in a sense, their city citizenship so easily. If you abide by the rules and work hard or join society, you can belong to a city. And just so you know, the vast majority of migration in the world today isn't from poor countries to rich countries. It's from the countryside of poor countries to the cities of poor countries, like Lahore, which had 3 million people when I was born, and 11 million people today. And Lahore is managing. And I think that countries can too.
Yeah, there's sort of a paradox here that I hear you talking about. I mean, on the one hand, you're celebrating the values of the global citizen. People should be able to move anywhere they want. There shouldn't be strict boundaries. We're all in this together. And yet, for a lot of people, the very idea of globalization, it's kind of a dirty word now. It conjures up visions of multinational companies moving into a country, wiping out homegrown industries, global capitalism, which seems to widen the gap between the rich and the poor. Does this seem really complicated to you as well?
Well, I think that there's two different things, right? There's global capitalism that currently functions, and there's how people move. I don't think they're the same thing. We actually have enormous restrictions on how people move and enormous freedom on how capital moves. And so most of what we call globalization actually is economic globalization. It's not the people moving. But I want to make one thing clear. I don't think of myself as a kind of global citizen, rootless person who sort of drifts around the world. I grew up in a house in Lahore where my grandparents, my parents, and we children and cousins live together in an extended family. I live in that same house. I live in an environment very similar to the one I grew up in. I understand that there's an attraction to the past and there's an attraction to family, there's an attraction to where we come from. But I wouldn't use my living in that way as a way to say that other people should not be allowed to come to Lahore. And I think that the economics of it, in fact, could be better if we allowed people to move but regulated our businesses more thoroughly.
We've been talking about a lot of political issues here. Of course, you are best known as a fiction writer. What can a novelist do to help us think about these issues?
I think that there's a reason why we have storytelling. Storytelling liberates us from the tyranny of what has come before and what is now, and allows us to imagine what could be. And I think that's incredibly important, right? To sort of begin to imagine what could be. But storytelling also allows us to cross the borders of our own self. When you read a book, you're sitting by yourself, all alone. You have your thoughts. And in the same place where you have your thoughts, there are the thoughts of somebody else, the writer, coming in the form of this book. And so in that moment, you are you, but yet you have somebody else's thoughts inside you. And I think that's an incredibly fertile and beautiful and productive and interesting space for human beings to occupy. And that fiction has the power to make us transcend ourselves, question ourselves, connect with other selves in unique ways.
It sounds like you're talking about the capacity to create empathy, to give us a window into other people who are not like us.
Absolutely. I think that fiction does have the capacity to create empathy, but I think fiction also has the capacity to blur our own sense of self. When we read about being a woman, if we are a man, or being from a different country, if we are from this one, it's not only that we feel a sense of empathy for that other person. Our own sense of who we are begins to blur, right? We occupy this fictional world for a while. We sort of dress ourselves up and play make-believe in our imaginations in a different world. And when you play make-believe, you are changed. When you come back into the world of quote-unquote reality, the world after reading the book, you're not the same person who went in. So yes, there's empathy, but also there's a kind of personal transformation that fiction does to each of us because we imagine different things.
I have to say, one of the things that I really loved about your novel is there's so much grimness along the way as your characters are fleeing and desperately trying to find a new place to call home and not just sort of living out of their suitcases. And there's all this violence and difficulty, but in the end, there's hope. The message in the end is the value of crossing borders, of meeting people, different people, not like you. Is that the message you wanted us to take away?
Yeah, because I think in a way what happens is that we imagine that the person who has left their country and is fearful of where they've arrived, a different place, and the person who is fearful in their own country of new people coming and making themselves foreign in their own country of their birth, that these are two very different things. They're not different things. I don't think somebody who's scared of migrants and scared of change is necessarily a kind of racist xenophobe. I think that both people, the migrant and the person who's afraid of migrants, are afraid of change and of how life transitions and of how things move on. The antidote to that is not to say that one group of people is horrific and that we should fight some battle with each other until only one side survives. The antidote is to understand that these are the human feelings of loss that we all share in, recognize that in each other, and try collectively to build a more hopeful world, which is hopefully the spirit that the novel ends in.
That's novelist Mohsen Hamid talking with Steve Paulson. His new novel, Exit West, was a finalist for the Man Booker Prize.